We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Enjoy a tall, cool dude.
What is this? What are we doing? What in God's name are we doing? Look, our lives. What kind of lives are these? We're like children. We're not men.
No, we're not. We're not men.
It's the Nightcap.
Are we going to be sitting here when we're 60 like two idiots?
We should be having dinner with our sons when we're 60.
We're pathetic. You know that?
Yeah, like I don't know that I'm pathetic.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
So then you asked yourselves, isn't there something more to life?
Yes.
Yeah, well, let me clue you in on something.
There isn't.
I love that open.
What is there better to our lives than the Nightcap here?
I love Seinfeld. Seinfeld.
And to think that someone that we know had not seen it because he lives under a rock.
You.
No.
What? Oh, right. Who? Why can't I think?
Take a guess.
Howard.
No. Huh. He just hasn't hasn't eaten food.
I don't know.
It would be Brayton.
Oh, well,
he who didn't see Star Wars either, and
yeah, uncultured.
Yes,
apparently.
Well, you don't see a lot of movies, apparently.
That's
too.
True. I have one problem, and it is movies I have not seen. There are a lot of classics. There are a ton of movies I should have seen that I have not.
Nobody's
Any Burt Reynolds movie.
Nobody is perfect, though.
Any Burt Reynolds movie.
Really?
Rest in peace.
Really?
I mean, a Burt, you know what I mean? I've seen movies with Burt Reynolds in them, but I've never seen a Burt Reynolds movie. Because there is a difference there.
Yes. That's it's.
If I were going to watch a Burt Reynolds movie, it would probably be Smokey and the Bandit, I think, right?
Yes.
That seems to be the one I hear mentioned first.
Exactly. If I wanted to channel Archer, I'd say Gator.
One movie I love, though, that is a classic movie, Predator. What a movie.
Aren't they
what
remaking
a film.
That?
What a flick. Yeah, for the 100th time they're making it. Just the handshake between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers at the beginning. I could just watch that for an hour. the best handshake in movie history. Not even close. 803-0550 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. We're going to talk a little Sabres here because training camps really started today. They were on the ice for the first time. We have lines.
We have some
and defensive
nice,
pairings.
We have some nice lines and pairings.
We do. Oh, man, we should talk about these lines.
Okay.
Because I'm game. Let's go through each line and try to take away one thing from each line, all right?
Hang on.
I got them in front of me. Oh, you want some hockey music here?
Oh, of course. Oh, I think we got to.
How I've missed you, hockey music.
We've got to do this right.
The one thing about hockey music is it's not quite as good as football music. Although this is pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's start with Group A. Number one line in Group A. Jack Eichel, Kyle Pozzo, Jeff Skinner. I figure that's probably... If let's just assume all of these stay the same. That's your number one line.
I mean, Sam Reinhart could be determined on that line.
We gotta remember Reinhart's not there.
But center left winger, that's exactly what everyone wanted to see.
That's the type... Yeah, I want to see Eichel with Skinner. And I think Pozzo actually fits well with them.
Yeah, no, that... I think Oposo's going to be fine. He's going to bounce back this year.
I do, too. I think he got the full offseason. Last year was his worst year of his career, essentially.
He was sent.
He's a pretty good player.
He was hospitalized, and he tried to recover from the offseason with that.
He's a pretty good player, and I think you put him with Eichel and Skinner. He could get close to being what he was when he played with John Tavares. Second line in Group A, Patrick Berglund, Justin Bailey, and Alex Nylander.
Pair of guys that are trying to prove themselves and really finally make that roster. I liked what I saw from Nylander in the prospects tournament.
Berglund is on this team.
Oh yeah.
So I think the fact that Nylander is getting to, you know, he's Nylander's center to start here. I think that bodes well for Nylander and maybe getting a shot, even if it's not in a top six role. Maybe they want to see what he could look like on a third line.
Top nine with some special teams minutes. He took a lot of pride in that penalty kill. He took a lot of pride in the penalty kill, too. So maybe you get a skilled guy on the penalty kill like Nylander, who's finally giving that much more of an effort. Maybe you got something there.
And I said this last night. He doesn't wow me with a lot of his physical abilities. I think his skating is a bit over-exaggerated. I think he's a pretty good skater. I think he's an elite skater like he was pegged to be when he was drafted.
His shot's good.
His shot is good. I wouldn't say it's amazing. His hands are really good. I would not say his hands are near the best I've ever seen. And he reminds me of Sam Reinhart in ways where, you know, you might have to remodel your game. Mm-hmm. Reinhart, as a junior player, was not what he is now. He talked about last year never playing in front of the net until he got to the NHL. And now that's where he makes his money. So maybe Nylander has to remodel his game a little bit if he wants to really become a contributor in the league. Johan Larsson, centering. Andrew Ogilvy, free agent from Notre Dame that they signed at the end of last season. And Victor Olofsson.
Olofsson's interesting to me. Every time he shoots the puck, I'm like, wow. But he's still adjusting to the smaller ice. Throughout the prospect tournament, you saw him make that one extra stick handle, and he didn't have the space for it, or the goalie would come over and react to the pass that was made to him, and he would be thwarted more times than not. So I'm interested to see what he can do. I mean, of course, Larsson doesn't excite any sort of hockey fan. So other than that, I'm not really too sure what I'm looking at there. Ogilvy and Olofsson, you're probably looking at a potential AHL combo.
Larsson, I think this means we could see Larsson waived. Not mm-hmm. this alone, but I think this might signify that we could start down that path. Maybe Johan Larsson does not make this team. And he's fallen. I mean, you look at what the center depth is now. Eichel, Mittelstadt, Berglund, Sobotka can play center. Rodriguez, Girgensons can play center. Larsson, I don't think he's playing day one. I don't think he should after what he did last year.
And those two line mates could be a telling tale.
Chris Colo, Cornell, Scott Wilson.
Not much.
I like Scott Wilson. Yeah. But
not much to really look at there. Yeah. You can shrug your shoulders.
Defense for Group A. Marco Scandella and Rasmus Ristolainen. That's probably your top pair to start the season again, I would think. Rasmus Dahlin and Jake McCabe.
That looks fun.
That looks like a pair that could be in your top six opening night, which, you know,
probably
I don't think there's much
four.
Doubt Dahlin's playing opening night. But, you know, everyone's talking about, oh, they shouldn't just give the job to Josh Allen. Well, the Sabres are just giving the job to Rasmus Dahlin. You know why? Because he's a high prospect, and he should be able to do it.
He's also really, 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 really
He's
really
also
good.
Way more of a guarantee than Josh Allen is. Lawrence Pilot and Taylor Fadun. That's probably a Rochester pair.
Yep.
Devontae Stevens and Zach Redmond. Stevens, I think he's done in junior, so maybe those will both also
Stevens
be guys.
That's an AHL pairing as well.
Group B, first line. I liked this. And I think you would probably put Reinhardt in the Pominville spot here. Mittelstadt centering Pominville and Sherry.
Yeah, probably put Reinhardt there and then bump Pominville. Put Reinhardt there, bump Pominville down, and see Sherry with Mittelstadt and Reinhardt.
And let's see Mittelstadt as your second line center.
Yep.
From day one, let's see it. And that looks like a second line.
Yep.
Especially if it's Reinhardt instead of Pominville. Sobotka centering Tage Thompson and CJ Smith. Now, that could be a line, but then it's probably more of your fourth line.
Tage Thompson excites me. I loved what he did at the Prospects Tournament. He was dominating possession when he was on the ice for more times than not in his two games that he played. He was creating so many turnovers at the blue line back into the offensive zone and creating many breakaways for himself. If he uses his body more, you have a great prospect. Because, hey, speed's not an issue with this guy. He took off a couple times in that tournament, and skating's not a problem with this guy.
Moving to the next line here. Asplund centering Rodriguez and Baptiste. Now, the thing that is interesting about this is you've got Asplund here centering a line of two guys that played a lot of NHL games last year. And he's ahead of a guy like Sean Malone, who's played one game in the NHL and has been pro hockey a little bit longer here in North America. And I think it's a good sign for Asplund here that he's centering a line with two established, I would call Rodriguez established. I would say Baptiste is probably on this team as a fourth liner. But I mean, you look at them last year, those two played a combined. Let's see if I can do quick math here. Eighty-one games. Combined 81 games for the two guys that was on Aspen's wing. So I don't think he's going to make the team, but maybe.
Yeah, but this says something about Aspen. They want to get him a look with guys that have gotten NHL time. So
they look good in the prospects challenge.
This could be a potential fourth line.
And then Sean Malone with Zemgus Girgensons and Danny O'Regan. Ooh, Zemgus Girgensons. How the mighty have fallen.
Yes, NHL All-Star to not much there. And needs to sacrifice a small goat to score a goal.
Defensive pairings for Group B. Nathan Beaulieu and Zach Bogosian. I don't like this. I don't want Nathan Beaulieu in my top six opening night. I don't want it.
I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I think Bogosian's a third pairing defender at this point, and Beaulieu's an extra.
What their defense looks like against Boston in less than a month is going to be really interesting. Because they've got a lot of bodies there. You've got Risto and Scandella. That's two automatically in there.
McCabe and Dahlin.
Automatically in there, I would say. That's four already. Bogosian, I think, is in your lineup if you're starting. You have one spot left. And we still have Beaulieu to talk about. Gouley, Nelson, Hickey.
That's why I think that's what this is that Bogosian is a bottom pairing guy. And Beaulieu's an extra, and they're trying to look at the chemistry there.
I want Gouley in this opening night lineup. But I guess it's not a 100% thing. Gouley was with Casey Nelson. They were the second pair in Group B. You had Brandon Hickey, who they acquired for Hudson Fashing, with Matt Tennyson. That guy's still here. And Will Borgen with Kevin Porter, who was playing defense today.
Creative. I would imagine there would be some sort of rotation there.
Matt Hunwick is injured. That's why. That's another guy. Maybe. They have... Let's go through the defense here a little bit. I'm going to pull up Cap Friendly for the first time in a while. Hockey is back. CapFriendly.com appearing on my page or on my screen. Looking at the Buffalo Sabres, here we go for the roster this year. Defensemen. As I mentioned, Ristolainen, Bogosian, Scandella, Beaulieu, Hunwick, McCabe, Dahlin, Pilot, Hickey, Borgen, Casey Nelson, Gouley, Fadoon, Tennyson, and it's like 12 guys. And I think five of the spots, unless there's injuries, are locked up. So who do you put in that sixth spot? I think you put Gouley in that sixth spot, to be honest. I think you keep Casey Nelson as your seventh. I think you can say goodbye to Nathan Beaulieu, see if you can trade him for anything or cut him, or waive him, I mean. You can't cut guys in the NHL. But that's what I would do.
Yeah, I think that makes enough sense.
They have a lot of lefties, though. A lot of lefties. Because really, you look at like
Dahlin
that top
does
six
play
I just
on
did.
The right. Have to remember,
I forgot
Dahlin,
about that. I forgot about
does
that.
Does play on the right.
He plays on his offside, and he was doing that today with McCabe. Because yep. McCabe's a lefty. He got a couple of lefties mm-hmm. in there. All right, I'm excited. Preseason begins on Monday. Sabres at Blue Jackets, and then Sabres are home to play the Penguins on Tuesday. Rick Jeanneret doing play-by-play for that. That'll be right here on WGR. Reinhardt is not signed yet.
Are you worried? Because
no,
reports with William Nylander in comparison with Toronto, looking at 8.5, the reports are that Nylander's camp is looking for.
Nylander is more accomplished.
Oh, I know.
Right now.
But what I'm saying, though, is that you know, with one holdout can spark more of a holdout from another party. Which one do you think bends first and gets the other one signed by reaction? I would guess Reinhardt.
My guess is they'll both sign right before the season. That's generally how these things go. It's very rare that an NHL player holds out into the season. It happened with Ryan Johansson a couple years ago with the Blue Jackets. Other than that, I can't think of a time where it happened. Maybe O'Reilly did it with Colorado. Maybe. I think he did, because he played a KHL game once the NHL season had got back underway, and that's what that whole fiasco was with Calgary when they claimed him on waivers and they traded for him or offer sheeted him. They would have had to put him on waivers and lost him, plus giving up the compensation. So I think it rarely happens. So I think you probably see Reinhardt sign right before the season. We saw it with Ristolainen a couple years ago. He came in right before the season started. Eichel last year, I know he had a contract, but he signed right before the season started. I just feel like a lot of the big contracts, not all of them, but a good amount of them, end up happening like right around there, especially when there's a dispute like this.
Yeah, I feel like everything's going to be fine here.
Still think you go long-term with him. I go back and forth on this a lot.
I'd be careful.
I think right now what I'm feeling is I think you probably go long-term with him. You get that cap hit as low as possible because you're probably hoping, he's playing especially with guys like Skinner and Eichel, his numbers jump up from 50 as a career high. You would hope he's better than that.
Now here's my take for this. It might be spicy. I don't know. You had a nice bowl of chili. Yeah. But
wow, was it spicy, by the way.
I might take a higher cap hit if it means not getting a no movement clause in there.
Yeah, but you work around those, don't you?
You do, but at the same time, I'd rather it not be an issue.
Eichel doesn't have a no movement clause, according to Cap Friendly. Is that weird?
It's a little weird, but not that weird.
He's so good, you would never think about it.
Exactly.
But
so I guess his camp really
didn't
care.
Or Cap Friendly just doesn't have it, and he has one. But Cap Friendly says Jack Eichel does not have a no-movement clause, which how do you not get that?
Hey,
Maybe it was for that little bit of extra salary to get up to $10 million.
Maybe.
McDavid doesn't have one either, according to Cap Friendly.
Well, then that's just what you would say. They're so good, you don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, but listen to me. And Edmonton, with that guy as their GM, I know McDavid would never get traded, but if you told me, if you went in the future 3 years and told me, hey, Connor McDavid's going to get traded, 100% I would have told you the guy who traded him was Peter Chiarelli.
Oh, I don't.
That's the one guy that would do it if anybody would do it. Don't get me wrong.
Chiarelli would make such a derpy move. He did trade Tyler Seguin. I think it's what you would say.
And Taylor Hall.
I think it's just what you said. The fact that they don't have...
And Jordan Eberle.
No movement clauses probably has to do more with the fact that they are that good that you don't even need to think about it. So it's really kind of a non-issue sort of thing.
Let's go to Dwayne. Dwayne, you're on the nightcap. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just going off what you just said, any GM of trade, Connor McDavid, should never, ever be a general manager.
No, obviously, yeah.
On the other hand, Gretzky did get traded twice. So, you never know.
That's right, he did.
Yeah. But I'm going to agree with a few things you guys said. I'm going to disagree with a few things. I agree about Tage Thompson. I think in St. Louis, he was buried under a lot of other young talent, and I don't think he was very happy. And you can see it in his game, the change of scenery of what it's done for him. I love his size and how deceptively fast he is. He uses his body to protect the puck. Very good hands, and he fits right in real nicely and on your third line, which is where he should be. Defensively, after Ristolainen and Dahlin, I don't think there's a single spot on the bottom four that's safe, in my opinion, other than maybe Bogosian, just because you're paying him. I don't think McCabe is a very established defenseman. He struggled a lot when he was healthy last season.
Are you including Dahlin in this?
Oh, I'm saying after Dahlin and Ristolainen.
Okay.
The bottom four defensemen. I don't think there's a single spot that's safe. I think all four of those spots are up for grabs, except for maybe, like I said, Bogosian, just because you're paying him. You're paying him a lot of money. You're not going to pay him that much money unless he's playing that badly to sit in a press box.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you that I could see any of those four spots being up for grabs, but I think if there was a guy, you mentioned Bogosian there would be your guy if someone's safe. I think I would think Scandella is the guy who's safe. I just think he's better.
I did forget about Scandella. I apologize. I can't believe I forgot about him. But when you said about Lawrence Pilot earlier, I don't think the guy came here from Sweden to play in the AHL. I think he's really going to push for a spot on the team. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people just from watching him over in Sweden and watching him so far here. I like a lot about his game. I like his offensive ability, and I like the fact that he knows how to play in his own 10, and he's a smart defenseman, too. And Nylander, having played as long as I have and, having coached for the last 8 years, Alex Nylander, he's a perfect example of what we used to tell our kids, the acronym KISS, keep it simple, stupid. I always thought that he used to try so hard because maybe he just felt a lot of pressure because you know, we did kind of reach for him in that draft. There was a lot of other players that, you know, we probably could have before him, especially defensive, like Sergachev.
Oh, or Charlie McAvoy, or I don't even want to go down the list.
Yeah, let's not go down that road
every time.
I'm going down that wormhole either, trust me.
Yeah.
But I think that he felt a lot of pressure to perform, and he just always tried to do way too much. And you see it in his game, you know, always the extra move. Instead of just keeping plays simple, and I think that's one of the things that Reinhardt did to improve his game when he changed his style, like you guys mentioned before, is he just started keeping things simple. He stopped trying to do so much because of the pressure of that second overall pick and having to perform and wanting to get the big contract, and he changed a lot about his game in that second half of the season, and it really showed. So I hang up and listen, guys. You know, you guys are doing a great job. And one last thing, I read that thing in The Athletic about Robin Leonard,
yep.
And I really hope that he's still is getting the help he needs, because as a goalie, like, I just know the type of – I've had concussions before, and, you know, I know what it's like to feel the pressures of that position. Obviously not at the level he plays at, clearly, but I hope the guy's getting the help he needs, because that was a – seems like he was in a really, really dark place in his life.
Yeah, Dwayne, thanks for the call, man. A lot of good points, and I'm glad you brought up the Robin Leonard thing, because I did want to touch on that.
And watch your short side there, Dwayne.
Yeah. I did want to touch on Robin Leonard. I think that it is absolutely great that he opened up about that, because in that sport, that's not generally a sport where you see players come out like that. It's very robotic. You know what I mean? The players all give the same answers in the locker room. There's not a lot of colored personalities, and the locker room environment, it just doesn't seem like a place where that generally happens. The NBA, that has become that, where guys are open and are free to basically say what they, or express how they feel. And that's why you had players like star players, like DeMar DeRozan and Kevin Love coming out about the mental health battles that they had last season. Like, the NBA, that environment, you're able to do that. And I'm glad not only for Leonard but for hockey that he's able to come out and still get the support like that. And hopefully, you know, none of this, you don't hear, hopefully there's not a lot of that on ice stuff.
Yeah,
a lot of trash talk like involved in that, because that's a serious thing. And from what it sounds like, that's not something that you throw in a guy's face. And I just hope that the culture of the sport doesn't become that. You've got your, I don't want to say that a guy like this would do it, but your Brad Marchands, your from back in the day, Sean Avery's, Matt Barnaby's, guys that would say anything to get under your skin. And that's what I would worry about. But on the Leonard whole thing, I think it's great that he's getting help and that he's on the right track. Even better that Jason Botterill.
Yeah, that was going to be my point there.
Jason is such a good dude that he would, even after the guy's not on the team anymore and wanting to move on from him, is a guy that will still call and check in on a guy like that. Like that makes me feel good inside that we've got a guy running our organization that is actually like a good guy like that. And that's proof of that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just one of those things. He's not just checking in, he's checking in frequently. You know, he's making sure to know that and remind Robin Leonard, this is no joke, and you need the support for this. And that's something that is a message that really should be sent across not just sports, but, you know, life in general.
Yep.
It's not something you take on alone. You need a good support system. And if you can be there for someone, that is a great, great statement about the kind of person that Jason Botterill is.
One other thing I wanted to touch on there that Dwayne talked about was Lawrence Pilot and not coming here to play in the AHL. And while I agree with that, it's not his situation has a lot of similarities to the Antipin situation last year.
He doesn't look as ready. He does.
Who doesn't?
Pilot.
I think Pilot looks 100 times better than Victor Antipin.
I think he's
1,000 times better.
He still struggles with the smaller ice. There were times where he would make bad decisions because he thought he had more time.
I agree with that. I'll say this, though.
I think he takes like 20, 30 games in the AHL before he starts seriously considering a spot in the Sabres roster.
That's fair. The one thing about Antipin, though, was everything I always read about him, what he was supposed to be, I never saw it. He was good at making tape-to-tape passes, and that was about it. I don't think he had much more to his game. Where was that offensive mind of his that was able to find open guys and be like a positive possession player? And I just never saw it in his game. And while Pilot, yeah, he looks like he's a little uncomfortable out there in the ice right now, there have been multiple times watching him both at development camp, at the Prospects Challenge, mostly even at development camps where I saw him, where he's got a lot of good assets to his game. I think his shot is great. I think he is more dynamic as a player, not just with his hands, but with his skates. I think he's a way better skater than Antipin was. And I like that he's not in the same situation. Like Antipin was, I'm in the NHL, I'm going back to the KHL. And I like the fact the Pilot will be able to go to the AHL. Because I think Antipin should have been in the AHL all season. And I'm much more optimistic for him working out than Antipin for that reason, and because I just think, from what I've seen on the ice, I just think he's a better player. So hopefully that works out, and like I said, you don't have to rush him in the lineup because you have 10,000 other defensemen here trying to get into the opening day lineup. Dwayne, thanks for the call. We're going to switch gears, get back to football. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Chargers general manager Tom Telesco, local guy. Went to St. Francis High School, grew up in Hamburg. He's now the GM of the Chargers. He talked about Phillip Rivers, the upcoming matchup, and the Chargers liking Josh Allen in the draft. He touched on that a little bit as well. So we'll hear from him. He was on with One Bills Live yesterday. We'll play that back coming up next. The Nightcap, Joe DiBiase and Derek Kramer here on WGR. Welcome back to the Nightcap here on WGR. Joe DiBiase and Derek Kramer hanging out with you for about another 25 minutes or so. Let's hear now from Tom Telesco, local guy from Hamburg. Went to St. Francis High School. He's now the general manager of the Los Angeles Chargers. He was on with One Bills Live yesterday. Here is Tom Telesco with the guys.
Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline in his sixth season as the general manager of the Chargers. He is a former Colts college and pro personnel director. Started his NFL career right here as a Bills intern at training camp in 1991. Western New York native Tom Telesco on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Tom, how you doing? It's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo.
Hey, Murph. Hey, Steve. How you doing? Hey, I've already heard that Thurman Thomas guaranteed a victory this weekend. So what do you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, right. So we can all take the weekend off, right?
Since that's Thurman's, right.
Thurman knows how that's going to go. You guys, I got to ask you, Tom, you guys, Phillip Rivers, your offense, you throw for 440 yards, you score as many points you did. You got to feel like, you know, you're playing well. It's like a little bit like looking a little better than your record. I mean, you guys being at home, seeing the Chiefs again, and the Chiefs always kind of get out of the gate fast under Andy Reid. Talk a little bit about how well your team did play in an opening day loss.
Well, like you said, Kansas City, Andy Reid, they're a really good football team, very well coached. They came out with a great plan. And like most football games, and it doesn't even really matter what the score is sometimes, it comes down to the little things. And we just made too many mistakes, and the Chiefs played really clean football. We had some drops. We had some penalties. We had some missed assignments on defense. We had some special teams that wasn't where it needed to be. And, look, I can tell you, with losing last week, the way we lost to Kansas City, and then I know the Bills lost to the Ravens, I can tell you that they both feel the same. Despite what the scores look like. But you get back on the practice field. The great thing about this league is they're going to let us play 15 more, so we got to get ready for Buffalo. And we know any home game in Buffalo is difficult, but the home opener just always has a little bit of different atmosphere to it. And it's going to be a great environment to play in, but it's going to be a challenge.
Tom, I love what Rivers said. It might have been post-game Sunday or maybe Monday about how he's not a fan of cycling, but he compared an NFL season to the Tour de France. You know, you have different stages, 16 different stages. First stage didn't go well for you or the Bills, but there's still a long way to go in this race, isn't there?
You have to. I mean, you know, you're upset Sunday night. You're still really upset Monday morning. But by Monday afternoon, you have to put it in the rearview mirror and move on. And that's what professional athletes do, and that's what coaches do, and that's what we did this week. You put it behind you by Tuesday. You're on the field on Wednesday. We had a really good day of practice yesterday. Great tempo, a lot of intensity. So, you know, we had a good mindset yesterday. We need to duplicate that today. We haven't worked yet today. We'll be out there in a couple hours and you know, get ready for the next week. I mean, even win or lose, you have to put the last one behind you. It's just the way that it is, but especially with the opener.
Yeah, Tommy, talk a little bit about, you know, the face of your franchise. Phillip Rivers has been there for so long. He's still playing at a high level. He threw the ball 51 times last week. And when you have a guy like Philip, and you're as the general manager, how far out of your way or how big a priority is it to make sure he always, every year, year in and year out, has top quality guys to throw to? I know Keenan Allen's there, Melvin Gordon is there. But then you also have the other side of the football you've got. You spend draft picks on Joey Bosa. But, you know, how much of a priority does Philip Rivers make the offensive side of the football when you know you've got a franchise quarterback and the league kind of revolves around that?
Yeah, you know, you try and balance it where you can, but when you have Philip Rivers, when I was in Indianapolis and we had Peyton Manning, they need more than they need help. You know, they need weapons. They need an offensive line to protect them. You know, we need receivers who can separate and catch the football because they know that ball is going to be where it needs to be, you know, 80% of the time. So, but you do need to build a balanced roster. You have to have a defense that can get the ball back. You have to have special teams that play solid, that puts points on the board, that can cover kicks and punts. But obviously with Philip, we want to make sure we have some tight ends, we have some receivers, but it just takes time. It takes years to get that built the way this league is. But you do have to keep an eye on all three sides of the ball at the same time.
Hey, Tom, you used a premium draft pick on Mike Williams, the receiver from Clemson a year ago, and to see him come out and have the big opening game last Sunday that he did, you have to feel gratified about that. Like, yeah, that was the pick to make, and we feel good about that. And the future is laying right ahead of him now for Mike Williams, huh?
Yeah, he had a nice training camp for us. This is essentially his rookie year. He was hurt for majority of last year. He came back late in the year. But he missed all of training camp, missed September and October. And by the time he got on the practice field in November, your practice tempo is just a lot different than it is earlier in the year. So it took him a while to get caught up, just football-wise, conditioning-wise, and then even take out the fact of knowing the offense and applying that in real time on the field. So this training camp, for him to go every day, you know, back-to-back, you know, really grind through camp, work with the quarterbacks, we're starting to see that talent that we saw at Clemson, and we saw that really the whole preseason, and then we saw that again on Sunday, and we think he has a really high ceiling. He's big. He's very fast, very flexible, and quick for a man his size, and he has good ball skills. So, you know, we're a team that spreads the ball around, so if you're a receiver or back or tight end, it's just, you know, if you get open, you're going to get the football. We don't really, you know, feature one guy all the time, although I know last year Keenan had a big day against Buffalo, but you know, it's a fun offense to play in because if you can get open, you're going to get the football.
Yeah, one of the things about your team as well, Anthony Lynn, your head coach, was here in Buffalo for a minute under the Rex Ryan regime, and now coming into his second year, he got off. You know, he took a loss in the week one, but he seems like your team is playing pretty well. Talk about some of the things that Anthony Lynn brought to the table as a head coach hire by you, and what are the things that he's done well in his short tenure there so far.
Yeah, he really brings a great presence to the football team. The players, they respect him, and the biggest thing is they really believe in him. We saw that last year. We started 0-4 last year, and we had just relocated from San Diego to L.A. There's never a really good time to start 0-4, but in that situation was not ideal, to say the least. And he just never flinched through that, through those first 4 weeks. And when he didn't flinch, the players kind of bought into that. And they all kind of followed right into what they saw from their head coach. And we played much better late in the year. Not quite enough to get in the playoffs. We got to 9-7. So he handles the team well. He's tough on them, but he's fair. And then there's no gray area. I mean, if you have a question, he'll give you a straight answer. Whether you like the answer or not, sometimes he'll give the players a straight answer. He coaches his coaches really well. Something that goes unnoticed sometimes with head coaches, but he really keeps his assistant coaches accountable. He tells them exactly what he expects at each position, and for me, he's just been great to work with. He's got big picture perspective as well as day to day, and it's been a great hire for us.
Tom, when we look at his first season and the trouble, you know, you got off to a bad start. It's almost as if that Buffalo game in what was it, November 19th. Kind of ignited your season. You won that game and won 6 of the final 7. Then, as you said, almost made it to the playoffs. That game against the Bills was critical, it appears, huh?
It was. You know, I think anytime there's transition, you know, it just takes time. We all like to see immediate results. You don't always get that. But having a new head coach and new thoughts, new ways he wants to run things, and having players with still learning about exactly what their roles and responsibilities are going to be, it takes time for that to play out. So as the season moved on, we started to play better football, cleaner football, less mistakes. And, you know, we went on a run at the end. Just wasn't quite enough to get in the playoffs. Buffalo got in. We didn't, you know, with the tiebreaker. But I really like what I've seen from Anthony.
So you're coming back to Western New York, back to your hometown here in Buffalo. How many tickets did you have to get for this game this weekend?
You know, luckily only four.
Really?
Only four tickets.
You
but I know. I love coming back. I mean, it's to me, anybody who grows up in Buffalo, you just become loyal to that city, and you know, you live and die with it. And that's the way I am with my hometown. I love it there. I'm still a Bills fan as long as it doesn't affect us. And obviously, this week it does affect us. But you know, I have family and friends, and you know, still a lot of contacts in Buffalo that I really enjoy. And I think they're going to be with their quarterback, with Josh Allen, who we did a lot of work on in the draft. Because obviously, with Philip, we know where he is in his career, so we have to know all these quarterbacks coming out. We really like Josh. We saw a lot of them, did a lot of work on them, and from what I've seen a little bit so far in Brian Daboll's offense, he can do some things with the football, and it's going to be a big challenge this week.
Hey Tom, I've often wondered. So you're in personnel, obviously, as a general manager, and you got a coaching staff that can look at film and evaluate video, but Do the coaching staff come to the personnel department and say, hey, what did you have on this guy going into the draft? And what did you have, for instance, on Josh Allen that might be a benefit to us as we get ready for this game?
Oh, yeah, that's all the time. Every week of every opponent, we go through that. Now, a lot of times they don't have to come down and ask because they've already done work on these players. So we may have Gus Bradley, our defensive coordinator, come over and talk to Ken Wisenhunt and talk about what he saw and Josh Allen in college, because obviously Gus wouldn't be studying him in college, what he saw in Josh there. So that all comes, it all comes full circle. You know, all the work we do on players in the draft, they're all going to end up in the league, and all those scouting reports just in our system and our database go from the college side to the pro side, and our pro scouts will use that as they put together their scouting reports on all the players. So, it just never ends.
We're talking about your player personnel. I really like the coordinators that you have, Wisenhunt on offense and Gus Bradley on defense. I mean, what a great resource for Anthony Lynn and his first real crack at being a head coach, huh?
It is, yeah. They're both excellent coaches. They're great people. They both have head coaching backgrounds. They've been in Anthony's shoes before, so they're great sounding boards, not only for Anthony, but for me, as we talk through different scenarios with our football team, anything from the culture of our team to player personnel decisions. And that was a big part of our offseason, to make sure those two coordinators are going to be here for a long time and to have some stability and continuity with our team, which in this league is hard to find sometimes. So we feel like we have a good mix there with our head coach and two coordinators, and then, you know, combine that with trying to get our talent better on the football field and, you know, give us a chance to win every single week.
We're on the line with Chargers GM Tom Telesco. Just a couple more questions for you, Tom. One of them about your stadium. We played there. Obviously, the Bills played there last year. Since that visit, and it was a terrible day for the Bills, I've come back and told people what a unique and kind of fun atmosphere it is there. I know you got a lot of visiting fans who take up some of the seats, and I know it's only a short-term venue for the Chargers team, but it's just a different feel there. I like that feel there at StubHub Stadium. How have you guys adapted to that?
Yeah, it's been very unique. There's nothing like it in the NFL.
Right.
And it's been a good setup for us right now. We know we're in a new market. We still have a lot of fan building to do in the L.A. and Orange County area. And the environment at StubHub, every seat is, and you guys were there, so it is so close to the field.
Yeah.
So it's an experience that you just don't get a chance to see very often. And then everything they do outside, the atmosphere part of the pregame, which I never get a chance to see, but I heard that's great too. So it's different. It's unique. It's a very nice stadium. It's just small by NFL standards. But we'll be in there this year. We'll be in there next year. And then we'll be in the brand-new stadium in Inglewood in 2020, I believe.
Yeah, walk us through a little bit. I know in 2 years you're going to be in a new stadium. What has the relocation been like for your facilities of practicing, where you you know, where your home offices are, where these guys make their home during the week. Talk to us a little bit about how that transition went last year.
Sure. You know, finally this year feels like home. Last year at this time, and even during training camp, there were a lot of moving parts as far as moving, getting a football team moved up to a new area, even though it wasn't that far away. It took a good amount of work. And then there's everything that goes on off the field. And all of our players have families, our staff have families, and you have to get your kids in school, and you got to find out all those the doctors and everything that you had all set up in your previous hometown. So that took some work last year. I thought our players and coaches handled the transition really well. Were there some distractions? Yeah, there were, but I thought we handled them well. But I can tell you this year, it feels like we have a routine. This is our home. We're set up in Costa Mesa, California, which is in Orange County. We have a really nice training facility. It's right near the airport. there's near hotels, there's places to live, and then, you know, our stadium that we go to, you know, 10 times a year is in Carson right now, which is just a little bit north by about 40 minutes, and then Inglewood another 10 minutes from there. So it's not a bad setup, and we're making it work.
Last question for me, Tom, and it's about this weekend. A lot's been said, and I remember as a player we thought about it a lot. The time change from a West Coast team going east has always been a little bit of more of a burden, obviously, than the teams from east to west. Tell us about how you guys, you know, do you think about that, and how much of a factor is that in how you set up your weekend with your players' schedule?
Yeah, it was brand new for me because the teams I worked with in the past have always been on the East Coast. So I thought it was going to be a big issue, that the 10 a.m. body clock start for us. It really hasn't been too bad. So like most West Coast teams, instead of leaving on Saturday to go to Buffalo, we'll leave Friday. So we'll get into Buffalo Friday night, and that will kind of help as far as the time change is concerned. And then on Saturday, we'll do a walkthrough at an undisclosed location so Thurman doesn't show up and scout us out and give all his information back to Sean McDermott. So we'll do a walkthrough, get our players out, get them loosened up a little bit, get that done, and then play the game on Sunday. You know, it's a 10 o'clock start for us on our body clocks, but we're pretty much used to it at this point, and so that should not be any issue for us.
Yeah, St. Francis doesn't really have an opaque fence around their field. I don't know what you're going to do.
No, we need tall walls around around wherever we're going to work.
It's good talking to you, Tom. Thanks for coming on.
Tom, thanks.
Yeah, anytime.
We'll see you
Sunday.
Thanks
for having me.
Okay.
There is Tom Telesco with John Murphy and Steve Tasker yesterday on One Bills Live. Last call in the nightcap coming up next, 803-0550. I got one quick boxing prediction to make for tomorrow and a prediction on the Bills-Chargers game. Nightcap, Jody Biasi and Derek Kramer. Last call coming up next year in WGR. Quickly, last call on the nightcap here on WGR. Jody Biasi, it's the nightcap. Quick prediction for both the Bills game and the big boxing match tomorrow night. If you have been out of the game for a while, maybe you missed the big fight. This isn't your Ali Frazier or your Tyson Holyfield, but it's pretty good. Triple G Canelo. I'm taking Canelo in a 12-round decision. And for the Bills, I think Josh Allen probably plays decent, better than Nathan Peterman. I think he actually might have a pretty good day on Sunday, but the Bills will inevitably lose because the Chargers are just that talented. All right, thanks everybody for listening. I'll be back on tomorrow for Sports Talk Saturday starting at 11 o'clock. I'll be on 11 to 2. Ryan Gates will be co-hosting with me. We will have Brad Ryder on at 1 o'clock talking UB football. UB plays at Eastern versus Eastern Michigan. They host them tomorrow night at UB Stadium. We'll talk Bills. We'll talk hockey. And, yeah, we'll get an update from Sabres training camp as well. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's the Nightcap. Jody Biasi here on WGR.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.